this is John Curtis, and you're listening to the Beat 2 Football Podcast.
Hello and welcome to the V2 Football Podcast. I'm Chris Lappard. I'm delighted to be joined on the line by former Man United and Exeter City defender Alan Tong. How are you doing this evening, Alan?
Yeah, hi Chris, how are you doing? You okay?
A bit sniffly, but I'm alright. Just getting over a bit of cold.
Oh, there's plenty around at the moment.
Yeah. So, firstly, how did you get into the game?
I mean, I've sort of, like any young lad, really. I think my dad was a big Manchester United supporter, and I can remember being knee high to a grasshopper playing football. You know, lots of photographs of me in nets in the back garden, things like that.
Yeah.
And it just evolved from there, really. I think traditionally, like most youngsters, I played in the school teams, and I managed to get into some representative football. I represented my town, which was Bolton, played for Bolton School Boys.
Yeah.
And that sort of ended up, that evolved to playing, I got picked to play for Greater Manchester County, which was the next step up, and from there Manchester United was scouting, and they invited me to go down one Christmas for a trial.
Yeah. So how does the trial process work back then?
Well, back then, I think I was about 14 and a half, 15 years old at the time, and got a letter through to say they invited me down over one Christmas period.
Yeah.
And I think it was, not too sure if it was sandwiched between Christmas and the New Year. I think I spent New Year's Eve in Manchester University Halls of Residence. That's where we stayed back then.
Yeah.
I think the trial started about the 28th of December, something like that. They invited us to a game over that period, you know, to watch the first team. And I think we went through to about the 3rd of January, something like that. So it was, you know, it was over the New Year, the trial period.
Yeah, so you joined the club about the same time as the great Alex Ferguson. Did you ever meet him?
Or? Yeah, absolutely. I think Sir Alex joined in November 1986.
Yeah.
And I just started training as a schoolboy at the time. I used to go down to the Cliff training ground, United's old training ground, twice a week on a Monday night and a Thursday night. I think we trained from something like 6 till 7 or 7 till 8. And shortly after Sir Alex had joined, I think he wanted to lay a marker down straight away, and he was quite interested in signing some of the local boys, some of the local youth players. So I was fortunate enough to get offered term schoolboy forms,
yeah,
and an apprenticeship. Sir Alex had not been there long; he'd only been there a month or two when he sort of offered myself and a few other local lads an opportunity to sign schoolboy forms and become an apprentice when I left school.
Mm. So did he ever come down to the youth teams and like impose a club philosophy on the throughout the whole club?
Absolutely. I think Sir Alex, straight from coming into Manchester United, he was always there. He used to watch a lot of the B team games. The way it were back then is you had like four teams in Man United. The first team, the Reds, is the A team and the B team.
Yeah.
The B team were usually made up of sort of schoolboys and maybe a couple of first year apprentices. The A team was more open age. You used to get some of the older apprentices and some of the younger pros involved in the A team.
Yeah.
And so the way it worked back then is the B teams and the A teams used to play, you know, similar to today in the morning, on Saturday mornings, and if Manchester United's first team had a game in the afternoon, they were about 3 o'clock kickoffs back then, and obviously there's all sorts of kickoffs these days, Sundays, Mondays, etc. But Sir Alex had come down and watched the B team and the A teams before going off to the first team in the afternoon, so you were quite aware of his presence, and you know, it was quite exciting to sort of glance over your shoulder and used to see Sir Alex and Archie Knox, who was his assistant manager at the time, keeping an eye on the youth. And you know, it was even, you know, more fantastic that you you had Sir Bobby Charlton used to come down and watch on occasions, and even Sir Matt Busby.
Yeah.
You noticed Sir Matt coming watching the sort of the youth teams as well on occasions, which was, you know, incredible for a, you know, like I was a Man United supporter, so it was incredible to experience that.
Yeah, I read today that they're going to name one of the stands after Bobby Charlton.
They've got
a name on the stands after Bobby Charlton.
That's right, yeah, they've announced it today on the South Stand,
yeah.
Which is, you know, it's that accolade's more than due. I know we've got the Trinity outside the front of the ground, but I think, you know, Sir Bobby is an absolute legend at Manchester United, so that's more than well rewarded, getting a stand named after him, which is absolutely fantastic news.
Yeah, I remember I went on the Old Trafford tour, and it's the only time I've ever been starstruck in my whole life was when I met Dennis Law.
Absolutely.
Right, so you're part of the club when they're revamping the youth set up.
How much did you
notice the change over the years? Was it completely different from 86 to...
I think going right back to the Busby days in the 50s, United's always had an identity of trying to bring youth players through, or, you know, certainly throughout our history we pride ourselves on doing that. So I think what Sir Alex was doing is, when he first sort of came into the club in November 86, I think he tapped into sort of Matt Busby's philosophy of, you know, trying to bring through youth players into the first teams. And they had, you know, back when I was playing, they had like a crop that was known as the Fergie's Fledglings.
Yeah.
Which incorporated a lads like Lee Martin and Daniel Graham. There was a lad called David Wilson, Ruffle Beardsmore, Lee Sharp, Giuliano Majorana. They were the sort of first group. Tony Gill. They were the first sort of group who got an opportunity to play in the first teams. And then, obviously, as the sort of club developed, we ended up in, you know, with the infamous class of 92, didn't we?
Yeah.
Which involved, you know, lads who played in the first team hundreds and hundreds of times between them: Scholesy, Giggsy, the Neville brothers, Nicky Butt, all went on to make, you know, several hundred appearances between them all. So that was sort of a, you know, arguably the best youth crop that football's ever seen.
Mm. How intense is the training at Man United at a youth level?
I think it's more, it's different. I think in the modern day you're sort of more cared for is probably the wrong term, but I think you're not it's not as, you know, the intensity's there, the demand's there, but yeah, I think you're cared for in relation to appearances. I think when I was playing, we used to have, like, you played for your school team, you played for your Man United on a Saturday, you had a Sunday club, and it was maybe too much. And
yeah,
I think from my sort of era, there seems to be quite a lot of people who had like ankle problems and knee problems and back problems and things like that. I think these days the young players at Manchester United are more carefully monitored. I think if you're involved and you signed with the academy, you're not allowed to play for anybody outside of the academy.
No.
So I think your training's more kept an eye on.
So is the focus, you know, greater on, so the physical aspects of the game rather than the technical aspects of the game back then?
Yeah. Again, you know, with the sort of the sports science taking over, and strength and conditioning coaches and technical coaches and things like that, I think there's more rigid structured programs these days. There's like individual learning plans for a lot of players, and they all work on different aspects of the game, whether that be speed, fitness, going on to sort of control, passing, heading, tackling, etc. I think everybody gets like a rigid learning plan and sort of adheres to that. And I think as well, going into the first team level, there's sort of a lot more focus on things like keeping an eye on urine samples and blood samples and things like that, you know, to see if you're showing signs of fatigue. So it's really, really advanced over the years. I think all we used to get when I was back at the club was just, you used to keep an eye on your weight. You used to get weigh-ins every so often. So from the scientific aspect, perspective, he's really advanced over the last 20, 25 years.
So at a club the size of United, do the coaches still give you enough time and attention as an individual or as a, or the team?
Well, it's a difficult call. I think traditionally, a lot of coaching takes place with the sort of squad, with the team, but I think maybe further advancement, we'll see what happens. I think there should be more defensive coaches, midfield coaches, forward coaches. And I don't know if you watch Soccer AM on Saturday. There's a lad on there at the moment who does a little bit of work with, I think different players go to him, and he really, really works on the technical aspect, you know, looking at how you are getting your first touch on the ball, where you're getting your first touch on the ball, where that touch is going, what your body positions are, what you're... I think more and more of that will probably advance in the game. You know, when I was playing, it was just... You used to work on shape and stuff like that, but it was more of a collective, whereas I think these days, I think everybody's different. I think there should be more coaches like who look after the full-backs or the centre-halves or... You know, because every position's got different demands to it.
Yeah.
And if you were a coach where you used to be a centre forward, I think that sometimes can be difficult to coach the defenders. I mean, we had a youth team manager called Eric Harrison when I was there, and Eric was an old defender. Eric was a centre half when he was a player, so he was fantastic on the back four. And we used to have Brian Kidd was there as a youth manager as well when I was at the club, and he. Kiddo used to focus on the forwards and the wingers and things like that, so we had a nice mix. But you know, traditionally on a typical morning, you'd probably train as a group and work on shape and things like that. So I think more individualised coaching will probably grow in over this next few years.
Mm. So do you feel that young players have it too easy compared to your day?
I think there probably is an argument, Chris, to say that they do. I mean, when we were coming through as apprentices, we was absolutely petrified on knocking on the first team door. Or you know, if we had to sort of brew up and take brews and teas, coffees, etc. And if the teas or coffees weren't to the liking of the first team, you could end up with a bit of a sort of punishment. And we used to clean boots. We had to go and sweep Old Trafford on a Monday afternoon. You know, if there'd been a game on the Saturday, so and it just keeps you grounded. You know, there's nothing wrong with that. I think these days, I don't know if apprentices are allowed to clean boots anymore. I'm not too sure if they removed that, but I think there's nothing wrong with a little bit of challenge there. Or it keeps your feet on the ground and. You know, I think sometimes that would be worth maybe looking at a little bit more in sort of Premier League football, especially for the apprentices coming through. Because you hear rumours, don't you, of first year pros and second year pros, elite level teams earning £15,000-£20,000 a week.
Yeah, we interviewed Nicky Eden, who's the under 21 coach at Leicester, and he said they earned more than he did in his whole career.
Yeah.
He was a Premier League footballer.
It's incredible, isn't it? And,
I think they were in the Championship then as well. So it's a couple of years ago.
It says the money's phenomenal. And so I think Rio Ferdinand mentioned in the papers a couple of weeks ago, he's heard of lads at Chelsea who are earning phenomenal sums of money.
Mm.
And they've not even made a first team appearance, so it's really incredible.
So you played regularly in the club's A, B and reserve teams. What are your favourite memories of the...
Well,
a couple of your favourite memories playing in them teams?
We did all right. I think when I was there, we used to win the league 9 times out of 10. I think we won it. I was there 4 years, won it 3 times out of 4. I remember winning the B team championship the first time that the club had done it since Besties days or something. So that was nice. We went to a tournament in Italy called the Grossi Marrera in, I think it was 1990 or something, and managed to win that. That was, I think, Ryan Giggs' first medal, possibly, at Man United. He went with the party, so I think Ryan was only 15 at the time.
Yeah.
And that was the first time that I'd ever heard Ryan Giggs, because we used to know him as Ryan Wilson before then.
Oh, right, yeah.
And, what had happened was, prior to the tournament, you used to get officials who came in and read out, passport photograph, and they read out your name, so you're Alan Tong passport, yeah, you stand up and then sort of like just checking that, you know, there's not any sort of fakery going on or anything.
Yeah.
And they come round to Ryan and they said, like, Ryan Giggs, and everyone in the dressing room was thinking, who's Ryan Giggs? Never heard of Ryan Giggs, you know, we knew him as Ryan Wilson, so anyway, Ryan stood up, and obviously from that day on, you know, we certainly know who it is now, you know, so, yeah.
Yeah, so in 1991 you moved to Exeter City. What prompted the move?
Well, I think at sort of United, I think at United at the time they had a lot of players in front of me. They had like Viv Anderson was sort of in front of me. And the problem that I faced at the time is the fullbacks could switch, or Lee Martin could play right back or left back.
Yeah.
Clayton Blackmore could play left back or right back. We even had like Mick Phelan playing at right fullback. Mickey Duxbury was a right fullback. Yeah. Tony Gill was I was well down the pecking order, to be fair. Yeah. So I think around that time, I kind of sort of, I don't know, it was a new challenge. I had to move on because I wasn't getting in the first team. So I ended up going down to Exeter City. The manager at the time there, Alan Ball, unbelievable person. When I was at United as a first year, I went on a tour to Russia as part of, I represented the Football League, and we played the Russian League in some sort of anniversary.
Yeah.
And Alan Ball and Laurie McMenemy were the managers of the party at the time.
All right.
So because they had a reasonable game in that and did okay, I think Alan remembered me from sort of a couple of years ago, and he gave me an opportunity to go and play down at Exeter City, which was, again, a really good experience. Really enjoyed my time down there.
What level were Exeter at that time?
Exeter at that time were flitting towards, they were kind of League One, League Two, Exeter.
Yeah.
Flitting between the two. I think we had one season where we just managed to stay up. I think it went down to the last game of the season. We had to go to Fulham. We were down in the lower echelons back then, and we managed to get a point and stay in the division, which was you know, quite stressful. And you know, we had a bit of a run. We was one kick away. I was one kick away from getting a Wembley appearance in the Autoglass Trophy, it was called back then. We got a horrendous penalty given against us that killed us on a trip to Wembley, so we had like a good run in that trophy. So
yeah,
but you know, some good memories, played with some good players down there, and like I say, some great experiences, and really enjoyed my time.
Yeah, so then your career was unfortunately cut short by injury. Do you think young players should have a plan for the future?
Yeah, I think Chris, they're working more and more on this. I think, you know, I was listening to Paul Lake on the radio just an hour ago on BBC Radio Manchester.
Yeah,
and Paul works for the Premier League, and he was saying that a lot of people now, a lot of clubs are working on the educational side. They're working on a lot of players getting opportunities outside of football. If you don't quite make it, you know, there's opportunities maybe to retrain as fitness coaches or performance analysts or general coaches. So I think there's more opportunities now than there used to be.
So how important are the PFA and helping?
The thing with the PFA, because they never forget you, you know, whether you've been a member in 1952 or whatever it is, you know, they'll never forget you if you contacted them in relation to anything.
Yeah.
Which is fantastic. And I think the PFA, you know, they help in relation to your retraining. They can give you grants towards certain things. So, you know, the PFA are a very important union, and, you know, they're always there on the end of the phone, even though you've been out of the game a number of years. They'll never forget you. They'll never turn their back on you if you've got an issue or a problem.
So how important is it for footballers to have a life away from the game?
Very important. Very important. I think I'm doing a bit of work on this at the moment. I'm writing a PhD on this sort of area where if players just have they just focus on a football-based identity. They think they're a player, they're a football player and nothing else. That can have a catastrophic effects when you have to leave the game because you've no other identities. That everything that you've done is just focused on I am a footballer.
Yeah.
And football's a brutal industry. You can be top of the tree one season, you can be out of the game in a couple. The statistics prove it.
Yeah.
It's something like is it 0.01 will ever be a pro, or 90-odd% of people who enter football at 16 as apprentices won't be in the game at 21. So
I'm sure I read an article that 700 apprentices got released last summer across the football.
It's frightening, Chris. And if you look at those guys, in those particular crop of people, there will be people who are heartbroken, people who have, that's a massive rejection to get over at that age. Because you're still young. You will bounce back from it. You will get back from it. But at the time, you feel as though your world's caved in. I can remember vividly Sir Alex telling me I wasn't in his plans, and he told me that I didn't have a future in the first. I wasn't going to get in the first team, and I can still remember that, even though that's now what I'm 44 next birthday. That was when I was 19. So even now, 25 years on, I can still recall that vividly. I don't think it ever leaves you, but because a lot of these guys have been played since they were 5-6 years old, and they've come through academies and things like that, and then to get told at 18 you're not getting a professional contract, it's a real brutal rejection. But like anything else, you've got to collect yourself together, look at your options, and try and move on. And I know a lot obviously try and get another club and fixed up somewhere else, and there's options to go to America now and China. So there's some fantastic stuff, but I think that's how the game's really improved over this last year or two. There's more options now for young players in relation to sorting the futures out.
As you briefly mentioned it then, but you're currently a lecturer in sports research. Can you tell us a bit about your current role?
Yeah, I've been teaching for... When I come out of the game, I had to come out of the game at 24, which was really sad.
Yeah.
I had a few years, 2 or 3 years, where I was quite lost and I didn't know what to do. Done a range of jobs. I was driving vans, I was working in warehouses, etc. And I thought to myself, I want to get better, I want to do more, I can do more. So I went back to university as a mature student. Picked up a sports science degree, and then following my sports science degree, Chris, I went back and did a teacher training qualification.
Yeah.
I think a couple of the lecturers at University of Baltimore were very inspirational. A lad called Paul Russell and Andy Fallone. They were absolutely brilliant lecturers, and they really inspired me to retrain as a tutor, because you go through your degree sometimes and you're still not sure about which direction you're going on that particular program. But I just felt I'd maybe like a career in education, in teaching. So I did my PGCE after that, and I've been teaching now for over 11 years. So I really enjoy it. So yeah.
I've had a couple of listeners' questions sent in before we finish.
Ethan
asks, rumours are that you're Sir Alex Ferguson's first signing at United. Is this true?
Well, I think if you get any Trivial Pursuit question, who says who's United's first signing under Ferguson, it'll be Viv Anderson. Viv Anderson was the first fee signing.
Yeah.
They paid, I think, $800,000 for Viv. Whereas if you ask for the first signing, not a fee...
It'd be
myself.
Yeah.
I signed for United. I've still got the slip in the cupboard somewhere, and it says on there, I was registered about January 1987.
Yeah.
So obviously Ferguson joined, Sir Alex joined in 1986, November.
Yeah.
So if anyone can beat that in the interim and prove the slip before 16th of Jan 87, they can take the crown.
Right, do you think that Man United will ever regain the dominance of the English game?
I think it's getting harder. I think every season is getting harder because I think a lot of teams are catching up now, Chris, and a lot of teams have got the financial power. Manchester United, when they got their dominance, when it started in the early 90s, when they won the Premier League, you know, they brought a lot of kids in, Beckham, Giggsy, Scholesy, and they were sort of accompanied by a couple of brilliant signings. Dennis Irwin was a great signing. $850,000 that they paid for him. They got Cantona for $1 million. If you look at that back then, you think that was the start of it all. And from then, United's dominance, for me, it earned them that spending power. You know, you could say, well, we've won the league here with loads of youngsters and a mixture of good signings.
They got a good defence. It looks like was Palston was only $2 million, wasn't he?
Absolutely.
Bruce scored about 15-16 goals a season.
Robbo was just coming to the end of his career back then, and they had some really good professionals, and from that they went on to dominate. Certainly, you know, up until the present day, we won the Premier League a couple of years ago. But I think since then, you know, obviously your Chelsea's have managed to acquire a very wealthy owner, Roman Abramovich. City have got Sheikh Mansour in. You look at the sort of Premier League at the moment, Chris, Tottenham are doing really well. Leicester have come from nowhere. So I think every season, Chris, is getting harder and harder to sort of, you know, set down markers. But I know United are supposed to be having a big branch review at the moment. There's obviously rumours about Louis van Gaal's future and whether he's going to be staying for, you know, past this season, etc., etc. So I think we'll be sort of probably seeing a little bit of change again shortly, but, you know, we'll just have to wait and see. So, you know, United are built on bouncing back and coming back from adversity, so, you know, we'll just have to see what happens and see if they can get back challenging again. I think the difficulty for United this season is to get a top four place. Talking like that with 12 games to go is really, really strange. You know, United, a lot of supporters are saying, oh, no chance of getting top four.
I can't see
it. We've still got 36 points to play for, so we've got to try and what our ideal would be to flip over City. City drop out of the top four, and we nick the fourth place.
I think a lot of United fans were hoping Leicester were going to drop off and we'll just kind of creep in. But Leicester haven't done it.
Well, I think Leicester have been unbelievable, haven't they? And they, you know, arguably, Chris, very, very unfortunate yesterday at Arsenal, you know. They got done by the last header of the game, didn't they? There was no time to kick off after it, so and then Tottenham's display at the Etihad was different class. So it's interesting. It's going to be a real intriguing finish. You know, there's four teams chasing there. Still include City in that. So I'm sure there'll be a few twists and turns over this next 12 games. There always is.
Yeah. All right, so before we finish, do you want to plug your social media or any websites?
Well, you know, I'm on social media. I'm on Twitter as Alan_Tong, Alan_Tonge. And I also am a sports lecturer now at the UCFB, which is an establishment which offers degrees in the football industry. We have degrees in marketing, business, sports coaching, media, journalism. We're hopefully getting a football science master's degree validated. So if anybody's, you know, any of the listeners interested in sort of applying for UCSB, you'll find us on the website and have a look at some of the courses that we offer. And we have certain open days as well coming up. So we've got a campus at the Etihad starting from September, so we're moving over there. So absolutely unbelievable facilities to learn in. We have the Etihad Stadium, we've got a campus at Wembley Stadium. We're currently in Turf Moor at the moment, Burnley's ground, and it's a great feel to have a learning environment where you can discuss everything contemporary issues in football, business, marketing, digital media, journalism, overlooking the pitch while you're doing it. You know, it's unbelievable. So if any listeners are interested in finding out some more information, nip onto UCFB's site and have a little read about us.
Right, so I've really enjoyed speaking here tonight. I'd love to have you on our main podcast one day to discuss the week's news and so on.
Yeah. But it's been really enjoyable. Thanks very much for calling. Okay. Great stuff.